This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Danny with us, a guest. It doesn't happen a lot, from Austin, the same city I'm based on. So we didn't know it, but it seems like we are both at the same city and probably in the same city, and we can probably connect afterwards as well. So welcome to the show, Danny.
Thank you, Armon. It's great to be part of your show.
And please tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and you know, how you ended up doing what you do today.
Yeah, my background was always in tech. I love technology. I was coding games at the age of 8 on the Commodore 64, for any Commodore 64 fans out there.
And, yeah, I'm one of them.
Here we go. My first subscription business was charging my friends a fee to play the games that I made, which was quite funny when I think about it. But later on in life, was very interested in starting my own businesses, started telecommunications companies and exited telecommunications company, and really got fascinated with software development, and later ended up with a company that was really focused around frictionless video. And that led to discovering AI in its very early infancy in 2015. And we were able to leverage AI to start simulating what we now call digital humans, avatars that effectively can interact and respond in real time, just like you and I are doing today. A very exciting adventure to go on in 2015. And boy, have we seen AI evolve rapidly since we started that journey, particularly in the 2020s. But that's how we got to what we do. And really, digital humans is something that we build and deliver for companies to either build products with, so they can integrate our technology into what they're building, so they can have a more human experience, whether that be in learning and development, whether that might be in sales, marketing, or customer service. And we also build a product we call the Immersive Training Platform. And this is really focused around creating very high-quality simulations that people can practice and role play in that prepare them for the real world.
Yeah, and then you write the company name in a unique way. And the name is unique, of course, but the U is, if I'm correct, the U is uppercase, Q is uppercase, and then there is two E, so unique. How did you end up with choosing that name, and what is the kind of the, you know, the inspiration behind it?
That's a great question. I actually don't get asked that question very often, other than it's a very unique spelling of unique. Everyone can't help but use the word unique when they're talking. And so they go, oh, that's a good pun. But nonetheless, unique came out of actually three things that really influenced why I loved unique. The first thing was that we understood that the reason why humanizing digital experiences was important was because it was a way to connect in a more personal and individual way. We don't want to feel like another number, whether it's customer service or you're looking to buy something. We want to feel like someone values us, they value our business maybe, or they understand our needs, and our individualism is important. We are unique. and who we are. Our fingerprints are unique. Everything about us has some level of uniqueness. And I think when you're building experiences, thinking right down to that user level of what makes them unique and how do you make them feel important, or how do you help them in a particular situation for them, that's really, really key to where our brand comes from. The second thing was, you notice the EQ at the end of unique, it was really about emotional intelligence. So there was a lot of technology being developed in language models and intelligence systems, but no one was really thinking about, well, how do we take information and then convert that into a level of emotional intelligence? Just like you and I are doing now, we're determining safety. We're determining, are my answers creating a reaction that is positive? Like, all these things are connected back into the emotional intelligence part. And then lastly, with Unique, we also did a lot of work with brands. And so we understood that brands need to be represented in Unique's way as well. And so you think about brand ambassadors, and these digital humans can become brand ambassadors. I think this is a big future for AI. We're just seeing the beginning parts of this, but I think brands are going to embody themselves with avatars, digital humans, generative AI representation. And inside that, think of like the Geico Gecko or something, where it becomes the new face and brand ambassador, representing personality of your brand. And so there's a uniqueness to that. So that's the three big influences.
Very nice. No, I love it. When, you know, the name is well taught and has a history and a story behind it, that just helps. So when you started this company, you have been CEO and founder of the company for 9 years, meaning that from day one, you have seen the company growing to this point. Normally, companies go through some kind of stages to get where they are today, right? And being in AI, and AI has been also something that has evolved during last some years, and we have a different AI understanding now based on, you know, these particular technologies that we see in the market today, Gen AI and more pattern matching style of AI versus many other types of AI when you started, and including this one. So I just wanted to understand from your perspective, how do you see the stages that you guys have evolved through to get where you are today?
Well, for us, it was interesting because the journey first started with this genesis, which is like, wow, okay, we can start to simulate human behaviors beyond something that was what I would say programmatic, meaning that, like, you know, if statements, then this, you know, it was more around, you know, probability or decisioning that isn't as sophisticated as what we experience now with, say, generative AI and large language models in particular. But I think it still was a genesis of, okay, this goes beyond some of the very rudimentary basic levels of what we were doing with digital, into we can start to actually have conversation. We can actually start to take someone through a process and very quickly build out many variables based on their needs, their individual needs, and how do we deal with those and treat those. And one of the biggest complexities, I think, with digital humans really was language. And so back then we had a genesis that this would be the future. This is exciting. It's got potential. I think what we probably underestimated is how long that language model progression would take from 2015, where you've got things like IBM Watson and other technologies in market, really using things like natural language processing and using machine learning to generate, you know, intent-based probabilities and matches, which worked in certain use cases, but still had a lot of limitations. Couldn't context switch, couldn't do things that felt very human, right? I remember sitting with Sam Altman, and at the time, I didn't like this statement, but he says, hey, I like the problem that you're focused on, but it's the second problem. The first problem that really needs to be solved is the language model. Once language is solved, then your problem matters. And at the time, I was like, yeah, well, you know, what do you know? We're having success. We're We're actually but the reality is he was 100% right. You know, once language models became generative and large language models hit the scenes, and in 2021 we were playing with our first large language model, we just were like, our minds were blown. We were just like, wow, the power of this, what this could potentially be, and look at where we are now, accelerated in such a way in the last few years, where language is very sophisticated in these models. And so our evolution actually was one that was kind of a very difficult season for really the first 6 years of the business, as we were trying to drive value at an emotional level and at an experiential level. But the underlying dependency of language, that was the thing we really needed to evolve. And very thankful that that did happen. Sometimes as entrepreneurs and founders, we make bets, and you know, sometimes the timing is completely off or not even possible. The market's never there. I think for us, it was a case of timing, and the market finally arrived, and the key problems that had to be solved started being solved. And now we have these incredible human-like experiences.
Now, I understand that your technology can be utilized across different departments, but which department and which use case is the sweet spot for you guys?
I think for us right now, we're seeing incredible impact in three areas. One's very new, but two main areas. The first is in learning and development. The key with digital humans is they can simulate human behavior, personality, and interactions that you might find in the real world, but you never get to practice and role play in a safe place that's accessible. If you're doing it, it's sometimes in sales teams, you do these awkward role plays and no one really likes that. But the irony is that if we don't do that, then we're actually just practicing on customers. Or if you're a manager, you're practicing on your first performance review with an employee that could go terrible. You might be, customer service and dealing with an escalation or a very upset customer. You're practicing in that environment. So we really wanted to create role play in a way that anyone could practice, create scenarios that feel real. And this is the power of the technology we've created. We can very much do this in what we call immersive training. So that's one of my favorites. The second one is more focused around automation and helping customers still have really great experiences in an automated customer journey. So we've seen chatbots, we've seen things that have been done in the past to automate self-service, and most people don't come away saying that's a phenomenal experience. Most people say that was pretty tough. I had to learn that it was not friendly. It had limitations, whatever else you might say. So we really focused on a technology for customers where it still felt like a friendly, human-like experience that is understanding needs and then connecting that back into solving those problems on the back-end automation, and then presenting that back with a friendly face and a helpful nature and a personality that's set to deal with any emotional back and forth as well. So if the customer's getting upset, we validate, we empathize, we actually do things that don't feel completely robotic, which is where historically that technology's been. It's like, you don't really matter that much. We're just going for efficiency. What we're trying to say is efficiency is important, your time's important, but we want you to feel important as well. And that's really the two major use cases for us and what we're doing. The third one, as I said, brand ambassadors is starting to happen with this technology. So now, instead of Geico Gecko's just being on TV, you're going to have this Geico Gecko on websites interacting with customers and answering questions. Or one of our customers, Qatar Airways, they created Sama, and she can book flights for you. She can take you through first class cabin and give you previews of what you could expect and why you might want to upgrade. So these types of brand ambassadors are very powerful, not just in real-time interaction, but you know, creating social media followings and other things. I think Summer has well over 300,000 followers now on Instagram.
Now, if you had a magic wand and you could really make things happen, or if you don't have a magic wand, but you can't wait for 10 years and work hard for things to happen, What is the vision and where you are going to be, what you would love to accomplish and unique can do in 10 years from now, 5 to 10 years from now? Where should we expect to see you guys, you know, would be, and what is the vision? Where, what are the things that you would do back then in 10 years that, you know, in 10 years you would do that you are not doing today?
Looking ahead or looking back?
No, no, sorry, I meant looking forward to really 5 to 10 years from now. And what would be things that you would do, you will do in 5 to 10 years that you are not doing today?
Yeah, I think the exciting part of where we're going with this is very clear that in, say, 5 to 10 years, we know that we're at the very beginning stages of what it looks like to simulate training experiences in real world. Today, that's done in more of a one-to-one conversation, like you and I are doing. But I believe that as we continue to invest on our side, we want to create worlds and simulations that feel far more like the Matrix than a 2D video call, so that you can actually enter into, through any prompt, you can create a scenario of something that you're trying to simulate. So I'm walking into a meeting with one of our biggest clients. Here's the people that will be there. I want to simulate a boardroom experience where I'm now in the room, I'm having these conversations, and everything feels very, very lifelike and real to simulate that. So I'm prepared when I actually walk into the actual boardroom. I'm actually less nervous. I feel like I've dealt with the questions that have been presented in the role play, and I can take that into obviously my successes in the real world. And I think that will affect education. So schools and others can then deploy this type of technology so that kids can actually practice in simulations that you're actually training for, and they can connect the things that they're learning and knowledge into experiences, right? And making that really accessible, I think, would be really powerful, as well as really, you know, hopefully affecting a lot of different verticals with technology like that. Good examples would be even in healthcare, and really enabling, you know, a lot of high stress situations to be practiced and worked through as part of the education system, but also once you're even in your career and working in healthcare, there will be different things that you'll come up against. And I think giving people access to still practice, to be evaluated and how they perform. I think it's not just about knowledge in healthcare. AI is going to get very good at that. It's going to be more about soft skills and people skills and how you deal with high stress situations. And I believe that this type of simulation in the future will be really critical to helping with that.
Do you see a future, because you guys are definitely working on human-like avatars, do you see a future that it's so realistic as you portrayed it right now, you explained it, it's so realistic that when you speak with that avatar, it really doesn't matter if it's Danny or Armand or it's their avatar, because it's just so realistic. It's just you are talking to them. This is exactly like them. And do you think at that point, you know, is it a good news that you have these avatars that exactly can simulate someone, or it's a bad news? Because at that point, I don't know exactly, you know, how does it change? Because I can be in 50 meetings at the same time, and that's a good part. But at the same time, people really get very kind of agnostic, you know, about really if this is Armand or his avatar, doesn't matter really. It's just the avatar doing most of the work anyway. So how do you see that? Because I'm with you. I mean, that future is definitely doable, achievable. The question is, when we get there, how can we handle these particular scenarios? I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's not clear to me with cloning yourself as a digital clone or a digital copy or twin, is going to be as valuable as some people think it will be. It will be valuable, I think, in very particular areas, such as if I wanted to practice a meeting before going to meet you, creating some level of narrow scoped simulation that would represent how you would behave, your personality, the types of questions you would ask, that would be really valuable and helpful for someone interacting and doing that. Having yourself represented in meetings and making decisions, that's going to be quite a complex problem and use case, I think, because, you know, it's kind of like, I think it would be even more so than trusting self-driving. People's comfort levels, you sort of start and evolve and add more, and you sort of get more and more comfortable with self-driving until you're like, okay, this has done pretty well for me now. So I do think that that is a very complex use case and problem, and it's not clear how well that would be adopted. But the technology, I do believe, will simulate to a very high quality effect, that it will move and look like you and have a lot of your data to represent your views and values and some experiences, particularly if, you know, these cameras now or devices that are tracking our life, and we're able to use that data in the future to train our own model of ourselves. I think all those things could lead to a very possible technology outcome, but I'm not sure that that is clear and how that becomes really valuable and trusted. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's good. You have given this way more thought than everybody else might have thought about this topic, because you deal with it every day. So that's a great answer, and I appreciate the insight on this. Now, when you think about, you know, what you guys do as more kind of, hey, you know, what we are doing is just helping employees to be trained much better, faster, and cheaper, right? So on these three dimensions, that you can shorten the time, you can increase the quality, you can, you know, be more cost effective from training, do you think you really hit on all three marks and you do all three, or you are more emphasizing on one, like quality will be higher or time will be shortened or the cost will be much less? What is your take on it, and what is the company's direction and focus on these three dimensions, if all of these three are the focus, or you are focusing mostly on one of these dimensions?
Well, I think probably the best way I can answer this is in an analogy. Like, let's say you and I, we start a little league team, right? Sports team. Let's say soccer. I like soccer. We're going to go with soccer, right? And we sit everyone down, and we basically have them watch a whole lot of videos on how to play soccer. Mm-hmm. And then from there, after watching all the videos, we go throw them into the real game. And we wonder and surprise why it didn't translate from a video to like structure, formation, skills, all the things that had to come together to make that a great team. And here's the greatest irony of professional corporate life and businesses, is that is literally how we train most of the time, is we give people a whole lot of information, watch these videos, click the multi-choice questionnaire to know you've actually watched it, and then go get them, Tiger. Get out there and be successful. And I just don't think this is the hardest problem in the world to solve from a first principles of how do you help someone be really good at something. Repetitive practice is the number one thing that will get someone really good, with some guidance and coaching that's observing and just giving some focused help on where you can continue to improve in life. So to answer your question, really, we're going after all three because it's really affordable, because it's a SaaS service. It's something that will be more effective in training than anything you do, because you're helping people practice and you're giving them guided coaching one-on-one specific to the needs of that person to go from maybe an average performance to a medium or a high performance, right? And that's the craziest thing, is most people are looking for stars because they need people who are just so naturally gifted, they're going to get there quicker. And all the rest of everyone else is like, well, they've done the training and they couldn't get there. It's like, no, they just haven't had sufficient practice and a system that says, hey, I know what to look for and I know how to make you better from there. And most people can actually go into a performance area, which is productive and really effective. And I do believe that we have a really cool story to tell now, because we've got automation on one side, where digital humans are actually supporting automation in a much more powerful and meaningful way. So then what do you do with your human resources? Where do they go and how do you make them better? Well, the goal here is to give them new areas that they can train into that make them really effective. But a lot of these people don't have the developed skills yet. So you need to then put them into a training program that isn't just here's video. Here's a way that you can actually practice and practice and practice and then establish that you are competent and you're capable. And then we can put you into the real game. And so that's how I think about those three areas. It's all three. And I think it's an obvious area where AI is going to be really effective.
Now, obviously, using these AI digital humans for training employees and, you know, doing many of these employee-related tasks inside the companies to train them, to help them to do better. It seems to me like, based on what you said, it's just increasing the quality, it saves you money, it makes it faster. But why... I wonder why some companies may not utilize this technology. What is stopping or giving them pause, or what are the concerns that mainly stop companies to implement these technologies? What do you think the main barrier is?
I think one of the biggest challenges that we're observing right now is there is a cautiousness around AI and will this generate the value that we've been promised? So maybe a skepticism that kind of goes alongside AI right now. And we've seen over time, particularly the last few years, a lot of maybe early products into the market, which are really just like these AI bots, you know, like they are not deep in thinking around the problem and how the problem is solved well. So a good example is anyone can use a large language model, say, here's a prompt, here's a role play I want you to teach, and let's go. And away we go. And it's not to say that might not have some value, but it has very limited value. And one of the issues I think these companies have is if you're in learning and development, engagement across the workforce is the key to this being effective. So if you don't have people that are really interested and investing that time in some little AI bot thing, this voice bot or chat bot thing that's teaching you, I think that it's going to hit a lot of ceilings and limitations. And if you've gone through that as a customer, you're kind of a little bit more skeptical. You're like, yeah, we did the AI thing. No one wants to use it. And I think one of the hardest challenges for our business is really overcoming that noise and highlighting that, you know, the reason it doesn't work is because it's actually not a real representation of what they're going to face in the real world. And if I was going to use something, I want it to be valuable, i.e. I want it to be as close to the real world situation where I'm looking someone in the eyes and they're reacting and their personality and all these things. Plus, it's more enjoyable to actually do something that feels real. And I believe that as we overcome that kind of obstacle, and customers actually use our technology, we tend to find that we are in a great position to win that business. But getting through that barrier is probably our biggest hurdle.
Understood. So I have a random question for you. It has nothing to do with the other questions and your company. If I would like to travel to a city and I ask you as a friend, hey, give me a recommendation and the best time to be there, and I have 2 weeks to really go to that city and explore that location amongst all of the locations and cities that you have been and you love it, which city would you recommend me to go and spend a couple of weeks there?
Any city. Any city. I mean, I would always recommend Auckland, New Zealand.
Okay.
I think Auckland, New Zealand, a couple of weeks is just a phenomenal city. You know, it's a good one for the bucket list too. Most people want to go to New Zealand, don't make the trip. So,
including myself so far, that has been the case. So,
yeah, I think that's, I mean, my favorite cities tend to be full of architecture as well, art and good food. Auckland's a very young city, so it doesn't have the same architecture, but it's got great food and it's surrounded by beautiful islands like Waiheke and oceans. It's a good one.
Fantastic. And my last question for you is really about a book that I would like for you to recommend to us. And it has been a book either personally or business-wise you liked it very much.
Yeah, as you can see, I like books, and there's so many good books that that have impacted my life and impacted as a leader, as just an individual. Probably the one is this one here. We just did a recent giveaway at an event, but it is probably it's the Sales Acceleration Formula. Mark Roberg wrote this book, the HubSpot story. But what I love about this book was it's really focused on a more engineering approach to scaling sales and successful sales. And again, really connects to something that I had to journey, which was I was always just trying to hire stars and really scale my team through trying to find that salesperson that's really, really good at what they do. And ultimately, I felt very challenged from that book, because you can take, if you create the right systems and formula from recruitment all the way to how you train and equip and onboard, you can really take people that might have been at a 50% and take them all the way to an 80%. And now you've got a much bigger team of effective salespeople. And I'm a big believer in that. And that's really what put me on to using our technology ourselves to help people practice to go from that 50 to 80%.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Danny. It was a pleasure speaking with you and having you here on the podcast.
Thank you, Arman.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.